Harper Audio presents The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman. Written and read by me, Neil Gaiman. For Amanda, who wanted to know. I remember my own childhood vividly. I knew terrible things, but I knew I mustn't let adults know I knew. It would scare them. Maurice Sendak, in conversation with Art Spiegelman, The New Yorker, September 27th, 1993. It was only a duck pond out at the back of the farm. It wasn't very big. Letty Hempstock said it was an ocean, but I knew that was silly. She said they'd come here across the ocean from the old country. Her mother said that Letty didn't remember properly, and it was a long time ago, and anyway, the old country had sunk. Old Mrs. Hempstock, Letty's grandmother, said they were both wrong, and that the place that had sunk wasn't the really old country. She said she could remember the really old country. She said the really old country had blown up. Prologue. I wore a black suit and a white shirt, a black tie and black shoes, all polished and shiny. Clothes that normally would make me feel uncomfortable, as if I were in a stolen uniform or pretending to be an adult. Today they gave me comfort of a kind. I was wearing the right clothes for a hard day. I had done my duty in the morning, spoken the words I was meant to speak, and I meant them as I spoke them. And then, when the service was done, I got in my car and I drove, randomly, without a plan, with an hour or so to kill before I met more people I had not seen for years and shook more hands and drank too many cups of tea from the best china. I drove along winding Sussex country roads I only half remembered, until I found myself headed toward the town centre. So I turned, randomly, down another road and took a left and a right. It was only then that I realized where I was going, where I had been going all along. And I grimaced at my own foolishness. I had been driving toward a house that had not existed for decades. I thought of turning around then, as I drove down a wide street that had once been a flint lane beside a barley field, of turning back and leaving the past undisturbed. But I was curious. The old house, the one I'd lived in for 7 years, from when I was 5 until I was 12, that house had been knocked down and was lost for good. The new house, the one my parents had built at the bottom of the garden between the azalea bushes and the green circle in the grass we called the fairy ring, that had been sold 30 years ago. I slowed the car as I saw the new house. It would always be the new house, in my head. I pulled up into the driveway, observing the way they had built out on the mid-70s architecture. I had forgotten that the bricks of the house were chocolate brown. The new people had made my mother's tiny balcony into a 2-story sunroom. I stared at the house, remembering less than I had expected about my teenage years. No good times, no bad times. I'd lived in that place for a while as a teenager. It didn't seem to be any part of who I was now. I backed the car out of their driveway. It was time, I knew, to drive to my sister's bustling, cheerful house, all tidied and stiff for the day. I would talk to people whose existence I had forgotten years before, and they would ask me about my marriage. Failed a decade ago, a relationship that had slowly frayed until eventually, as they always seemed to, it broke. And whether I was seeing anyone? I wasn't. I was not even sure that I could, not yet. And they would ask about my children. All grown up, they have their own lives, they wish they could be here today. Work. Doing fine, thank you, I would say, never knowing how to talk about what I do. If I could talk about it, I would not have to do it. I make art. Sometimes I make true art, and sometimes it fills the empty places in my life. Some of them. Not all. We would talk about the departed. We would remember the dead. The little country lane of my childhood had become a black tarmac road that served as a buffer between two sprawling...